Hey there, it's Nick. Today we have something a little different, a story told in three parts in collaboration with our friends at the podcast Everything is Stories. All the names have been changed to preserve anonymity.
I remember, holy shit, I haven't thought about this in ages. I was at my dad's when my parents were separated. I was at my dad's house, rooting through stuff in his bedroom because I was being nosy. And I'm in this like little walk-in closet. And in his closet, I had found this like box, a black box, sort of like what you would find, you know, really fancy dresses in. And I opened it up and there was all these tiny little black pouches in it. And I opened one of the pouches out and, you know, like shook it out. And it was, this is going to sound so crazy, but it was like emeralds and jewels, tons of black little pouches and, you know, maybe six or seven in each pouch. And the ones that I remember most clear was emeralds. So I put it back and no big deal. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, my dad had given me a ring that had an emerald in it and it was gold. And I remember he had to put tooth floss or something around it because it wouldn't fit me. And I felt so proud because it was the first jewelry my dad had ever given me, like real jewelry that wasn't like a little heart or Hello Kitty. And so I remember being 9 or 10 and for about a year or so thinking, okay, my dad's a jeweler. Maybe he imports emeralds from Colombia, you know, and sells them to jewelry places here. And I really couldn't tell you at that time what my parents did for work.
From Radiotopia, you're listening to Love and Radio. I'm Nick Van Der Kolk. Today's episode, La Retirada, Part 1.
You know, he was the kind of dad that, like, got us, like, Power Wheels. You know, like, my sister had, like, a Lamborghini Power Wheel and I had a Jeep Cherokee Power Wheel. We had, like, our rooms were, we had two separate rooms that were, like, decked out with everything. He gave us everything we wanted. He, like, pretty much spoiled us. He was a good dad. I grew up with him up until I was about, like, 8 years old. We didn't live together, but he lived in the same neighborhood as my mom. When you talk to my mom, she could be like, I was fucking scared out of my mind, and she didn't convey it to us. When you sit with my mom, I'm gonna get a lot from it, because I don't know this shit. These are the questions that you'd expect someone to have asked, but like, I've just never asked them. Did you want to go over the name stuff? Remember, Mom, we're not using our names.
But I have to change the names?
Well, that's what they're gonna... I don't know how you guys want to do it. What's a name, Mom, that you like a lot but isn't connected to in any way to you?
Make it Rocio. That's my best friend from the Dominican Republic, no? Okay. Rocio. Yeah. The last name? Let's go with Gomez. Yeah. Rocio Gomez. Rocio Gomez. I write it down so I could remember. Hi, my name is Rocio Gomez. I'm the mother of...
Just say Jeff Quinceña. Don't even worry about the last
name. Okay. Yeah. My son name is Jeff and my daughter Quinceña. I got out so early from the Dominican Republic when I was only 11, came to New York. We came here, and I remember it was snowing. And my uncle and my aunt, they used to live here, and they came to the airport with coats. First time that I wore a coat. I skipped school. I did a lot of skipping school. If I had a class that I didn't like or whatever, I would skip that. And then the next day I would skip, you know, I would miss so much that they would call my father, you know? So I was always in the principal office. Trust me, I was a tomboy. I would fight. I had the strength, I had the ability, and I was fast. I would go, I don't care if I get beat up. I became like a little gang, a little clique, you know, maybe like 8. We used to wear our jacket, Levi's, yeah, with a name and everything. And I was the leader. we didn't do nothing bad. I didn't like people doing things to people that, you know, cannot defend themselves. Whoever was picked on, we were there to protect them. Latinas, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, we used to help a lot of South Americans. I remember this girl from Ecuador. She had long hair, black long hair. And she was going up the stairs, and this black kids, they started putting a match in her hair. When I saw that, man, I just jump and fight. I remember smoking pot for the first time, and I remember laying down because I freak. I couldn't move and I couldn't see. This was pot. And then I just did not. I didn't want to mess around with drugs.
She met my father at something similar to Kentucky Fried Chicken. It was a chicken shop.
And it was summertime in Queens. We were painting the house, my father and I, and my father wanted some beer. So I said, okay, I go over there. They have a cold. So I went over there, and they used to sell fried chicken. And the guy that was selling the fried chicken went to my high school. And I said, hey, hi, how are you? This and that and whatever. And I turned around, and it's a gentleman there and his friend.
My dad tells a story that he saw this beautiful, elegant, tall woman in these tight jeans in front of him. And he kind of like inched his way forward in the line and started up a conversation with her.
He asked me, hey, do you need any help? You know what I do? I says, no. And I go, hey, I got my car here. If you need a ride, I says, no, thank you. I live only 2 blocks away. But he kept coming and said, come on, let me help you. And I says, heck it. I gave him the beer and I said, and I start walking out, say bye-bye to the guy, and he kept walking with me. He started asking me questions, where you from? And I oh, don't tell me you Puerto Rican or Venezuelan. And I said, no, I'm Dominican. I said, oh, how could you? Yes, and whatever. We were just having a conversation. He told me why he came here.
My dad was born in Colombia and left to come to the United States. And he's in New York and he's going to school out here
to study English and business at the local community college.
But his goal is going back to Colombia to help his father, because his grandfather had a lot of land, especially rice and cattle. My family, they had cattle and they had rice and they had, you know, we have that in common. So we got land too in the Dominican Republic and this and farming and everything. You know, when I see him for the first time, I don't find him. You know, his face was beautiful. It's his ways. He will come, open the door for you. You know, he's a gentleman, you know, and he speak a beautiful Spanish. People that comes from Bogota, their Spanish is superior. It sounds so beautiful, especially when you're getting a girl to fall in love with you. Well, it works like magic. That next weekend, we went to the World Fair. And I remember the second day I kissed him. It was then the beginning of my relationship with their father, Rodrigo. After being like 3 months or so, or maybe more, we were going to go to a little party in Queens College. It was nice, a lot of salsa. So we were going to go all the way over there. So he picked me up. I'm in his car. And he went out to get some cigarettes or something like that. And I look down. And in the rug, the little rug, you know, the mat on his side, I see like the point of an envelope. I say, what's that? And I read. I see his name, another lady name. I say, what the heck? It's a divorce decree thing. So this fucking guy is married. I put it back. I didn't say anything until we got there.
My dad had been married to this Jewish woman so that he could gain his residency to live here.
What the fuck is this? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So my mom was pretty upset. They fought about it.
he's panicking. He says he didn't live with her, whatever. You know, maybe though it was the green car. Of course, they were married and they were living in the same house. He did live with her. He did fuck her. He did all that stuff. But, and she had three kids. The girl was ugly. That's another thing. I mean, you know, she was ugly and kind of old. I don't want nothing to do with this guy. As I said, stop seeing him, whatever. One day I come in to the house and he's over there. He had a cut all the way from his forehead to his top of his head. A cut, a big, huge cut. And my mom was putting cold towels and stuff like that. So I walk in, I says, what happened? He got drunk. He had a car crash. The car was almost total. So then I end up taking him to the hospital. He got like, I don't know how many stitches. Took him home to his house and made up again. That was my chance to break it, but made up, okay, he loves me, he whatever, and his words, he was good with it. I got married in 1978, then we were going to go to the honeymoon, but we got the surprise that your grandfather wanted to come to the honeymoon, and grandmother, and aunt, and uncle. So we had to change our honeymoon plan to go to Niagara Falls. Right there, I should have walked out. In 1979, we moved to Bogota, Colombia, you know, just to help his father.
My grandfather made a name for himself farming rice, did really well for himself, bought more and more and more land, and started expanding into cattle. And my dad came back basically to help run that.
Because my husband's brothers were getting into, Air Force. They all wanted to become pilot. I don't know why. But he was going to be left alone with so much land. That was the beginning of my life there. Once I knew that I was going to Colombia, my father made me become an American citizen because he said that Colombia wasn't a stable country and at least, you know, they will take care of the Americans. I met the family. They were very nice Colombians. They were country people. They grew up in a small town. If they went to a 6th, 7th, 8th grade, that was a lot. You know what I mean? You know, they didn't have the culture. It wasn't like me. I went to good schools, you know. I knew my history. I knew, you know, where I come from. And not them. They were campesinos, you know. They were like country folk. They were just working the land. And they took me and see the land and see me the countryside. It was beautiful. It was nice. Everybody was so nice. I'm going to spend 2 years over here. I don't care. You know, it's fine. I was teaching English to little kids. My husband will go and work in the country on his land, his father's land. And we were beginning to see production, money from the land, and life was good. Then I got pregnant of Ksenia. And when I was around 3 months, I wanted to wear my maternity dress, and I was going to go out with my husband, was going to take me out for the first time looking like a pregnant girl. I'm going to go out and eat dinner with my husband, and he said that he was going to come back. He was going to pick up his brother, younger brother, and they never came back. I waited 2 hours and so, and one of the son of my neighbor came in a car and I says, let me go to the centro. Centro is to the center of the city. That's where my husband family used to hang out. So I went over there and the car, I didn't see it nowhere. But passing by a little disco that usually was meant for the mozas, they call it the mozas over there. Married guys will bring the girls that were not their wife over there to dance and have a good time. And the car was right in front over there, so I went in. He was dancing with a beautiful girl, really young, like 17-year-old. And I pulled my husband out of the place, and he came. He got startled. He got, and he's apologizing, and he's making excuses for himself and whatever. And then his brother came in. I was already screaming to him, and the thing that hurt me the most, it was because, you know, it was so much meant to me, you know, to go out, you know, with a little belly already. Well, that happened, so I said, heck, I'm going to have my girl in the United States. That was my main priority. But then, here we go. That's when everything started. Everything started with mafia, with the Colombian mafia.
Basically, everything that happened with my dad and his brothers, my uncles, the way that it's always been in my head presented in a way was that, like, he was over here and then one of his brothers was like, hey, man, you know, the land and all that that mom and dad left us, we figured out something to do with it. Come back and be a part of it because we're making money.
One of my husband's younger brother was the first one that started dealing with illegal drugs. He was an Air Force pilot. They proposed to him to do a trip to the Bahamas for marijuana and pay him $15,000. And I remember he bought a Honda, and it was kind of a orange, beautiful color, like really shiny, but a nice orange. Everybody liked that car. At the beginning, I was all marijuana, then started being cocaine. Yeah, another brother got enlisted, and then the other brother, and my husband's function was mainly, it was the money laundering. He will do the money part because he couldn't be a pilot. It was a corporation that used to bring flowers here from Colombia, and he will take the money to that corporation. But he was the one that it was in charge with his mafiosos. Was in charge of getting all the money together to send it back to Colombia. They were using the land strip of my father-in-law. He has a cattle there, but he has a landing strip. That landing strip was being used for drug dealers to land and take off and refuel. People from the Air Force would go equipped with machine guns and stuff like that, and they used to get out first and search the area before we could come out. They were doing a flight, all the pilots, and that load was somebody very important, two parties involved, two mafia guys. It was four planes going to Bolivia, I believe, or Peru. One of the planes got caught. My ex-husband's youngest brother was caught by the police, so they couldn't get out. My ex-husband is not a pilot, so he's staying in Bogota. And he saw that his brother, youngest brother, was caught. He came out and stayed with him, giving up the drugs and whatever. They got arrested. They were thrown to jail. That came out on the newspaper all over the world. All over the world. Dominican Republic, my family saw it. And then all the negotiations started, you know? Money speak. They already bought all the people on the jail. And when they were there in jail, they were partying. They would bring them food. They got the best thing. They bring them girls. They already had everything set up for them. My apartment in Bogota was set up for all the communication, so we could talk to them from prison anytime. So all of those mafia lords used to come in the nighttime to my house and talk to them. The mafia, they pay off, I think it was $2 million to get the release. And they bought a lot of politicians, and they bought a lot of everybody. And they were out. They were out like maybe 2 weeks or something.
So they must have felt probably invincible.
They were. It was very corrupted, you know? You were very well protected by the cops, by whoever, you know. Nobody will mess around with us. They know, especially who you work for, they will not mess around with. No. And over there at that time, being a mafioso, it was even better than being a doctor. People will, you know, even political people in the bank, they used to see you like God, even though they knew what you were doing. You know what I mean? When I used to go to a restaurant and one of them would walk in or whatever, or I mean, it was like if the Pope would come in. The respect they used to get, it was mainly the respect. And me being in there, I didn't, it came to a time that I didn't give it too much thought. I used to go to the spa, you know. I used to play cards in the club. The best clubs they had. It was always the biggest celebration anywhere. The parties, they were so fancy. So I had the best dress. I had the best. We used to go and even be with President of Colombia. Celebrations and stuff like that. And it was never wrong. I used to go to my drawer and take out $500 if I wanted. You know, it was going to a farm and seeing a horse. And I won 15 of them. How much is horse? And this horse came from, you know, the Middle East, and it cost a fortune, and you don't care. You like that plane? You get that plane. Whatever I wanted, I had it. And I didn't have to work for it. I didn't have to do anything for it. You become in a state that is natural. It is all so freaking natural. That's a way of making money. That's a way of whatever. If I didn't give it a lot of thought and I wasn't brought up the way it was, people were just fine with it. The only thought that I had, it was how much harm we were doing. That was always in the back of my mind, you know. They only knew, you know, if they only knew. And they only knew. And the whole thing is, I guess, because... Even though Colombia has a lot of drugs, they don't have a lot of users, you see? And if they have users, maybe it's the app. Well, I've seen the people maybe doing cocaine, but there was like the lowest kind of side. You didn't see that. You didn't see people, he's a drug addict, or he has a habit, or you don't see that as you see it here. It wasn't affecting them, so they didn't care. I came to my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and I says, hey, you know, you're going to see babies shaking from addicts. You know how much people you guys are hurting? I had seen that when I was on the States. It didn't seem to matter. My brother-in-law and husband, they bought them a beautiful apartment in Bogota. It must have been like maybe $2 million. As long as they were giving him stuff, everybody was fine. His mom believed that if a woman, you know, wouldn't be faithful or wouldn't do the thing for the man or whatever, she should be hitting in the mouth. Hay que pegarle en la jeta. Jeta is animal mouth to the animal. And she said it just like that to me. My sister-in-law's there. They will follow whatever the husband wants. And they didn't mind. I wasn't raised that way. But sometimes I just, you know, just play the role, you know. I just lay back and says, well, one of these days it's going to be over. Or for me to take my kids at that time, you know, I still love my husband. And but I knew that it was wrong. I was always there that it was wrong. I was already becoming too, Colombian thinking, you know, just saying yes sir, no sir, and doing whatever they want. Yes, maybe I was. And I don't know. You see, it's different when you already had things in life. You know, I had cars and whatever. Now I was raised in New York. Fancy car, everything, I used to see it. So it wasn't like a big deal for everybody there I was. I was never born poor. They were, you know, that's a big deal. But once you're in it, you want more and more and more. And I saw it. And the competition, it was also between the brothers. If one of the brothers has something, the other one wanted it. And wanted it even better. Between them, they were already fighting because of the money. It came to that family. I mean, if it is destroyed, it's because of that. The greed. And then as it get bigger, the bigger problems they have. I used to see Americans coming in that I have to be pilots and I have to translate for them. And you have to be very careful. And I used to see that they used to be with bodyguards and stuff because they didn't want them to make phone calls or whatever, because we didn't know if they were, you know, working for the DEA or they were informant and where they were, you know. And I began to understand. I says, man, shoot, I'm here. I'm playing a really huge role here. I'm involved as anybody is. That used to make me not want to go to sleep, you know. That used to make me really bad. I wanted to leave this world, you know, the drugs. Get away from that kind of life. Get away, you know, just get away. And my hope it was, you know, that let's go to the United States. I will talk to my husband about it. And he says, don't worry, we're going to get out. You know, just make enough money to buy. Just want more money. You know, I think we have enough. I didn't need it. And plus what it comes with it, you know. And even though, you know, how much money I had, I wasn't content. It wasn't filling me up. It wasn't the life that I want. And I didn't want, you know, my kids to grow up. I want them to be educated properly. I didn't want to bring up my kids, you know, with that, in that. I would tell my husband, I will fight with him. He was the same, we are going back, but it never seems to us going back. It is so hard to break, so hard to get out, so hard to everything that my husband, I guess, because all his family was on it, he couldn't break apart. He couldn't. And I knew then, you know, that I will never break apart neither. Either he get caught, maybe, or whatever, it was never going to end. One of the mafiosos, I remember, he said over there, and this is Gacha. I don't remember his name, but they used to call him Gacha. He says, you know, once you start building, the more you want to build. You know, no matter, you won't be content just with one house. You're going to build more. That's what it's all about. The greed, the money. The more you have, the more you want. Yeah. But it never stopped.
That's it for Love and Radio, but we'll have part two of this story out in just 1 week, so stay tuned. This episode was produced in collaboration with the Everything is Stories podcast, which you can find at eisradio.org. The show was produced by Brendan Baker, Garrett Crow, Mike Martinez, Tyler Ray, and myself, with production assistance from Paulus Van Horn, Kira O'Connor, and Harriet Sokmansoor. Additional help from Ben Grimmie, Isvet Verde, and Antonia Sarahito. Special thanks also to Michael Jones at Studio 44 in Brooklyn. Love and Radio is a production of Radiotopia, whose founding sponsors are the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, celebrating creativity, chaos, and teamwork. Thanks for listening. And here's what's coming up on next week's podcast.
The You gotta take that stuff out of here. You know, I got the kids here. Says, yeah, but tell your husband to tell me what to do with it.
All of a sudden, he just disappeared. And, like, it was like, oh, he's out on business.
One day, I came home and found all of these papers on her bed that said the state of New York versus my dad.
Well, it all began with marijuana. Yeah, marijuana.
This is how I got away from them all.